Man Show, Thursday, 7 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM with your host, DJ Medi. Hey, that's me. We'll be interviewing fans, musicians from all genres and all languages, and other talents too, like photographers and videographers. We'll check out local businesses, cheap eats, and yummy treats. And also events that are happening or not happening around town. And places to go and get some fresh air. Go for a walk. And places that are still open and you can go for a shop. Although we focus on East Van, we'll be making friends everywhere and anywhere. Hi! We'll chat with skateboarders, athletes, dancers, artists, chefs, bakers, tailors, comedians, hey, you name it, we want it. See a familiar face or a familiar place right here on the Wham Bam East Van Show. And welcome to the Wham Bam East Van Show. I'm your host, DJ Medi, and we're broadcasting from Simon Fraser University on unceded Coast Salish territories in beautiful Burnaby, BC, which includes the Squamish, the Musqueam, the Coquitlam, the Catsey, and the Tsleil-Waututh Nations. All right, today we have an amazing guest. Oh, looks like something is repeating somewhere, and I got to stop. We're going to play some music and see if we can get our guests to come to the radio station. And we'll find out who it is after this song. We're going to play Art Bergman's Free the Sky. Thank you.
a butt with Latin hips. She fixes the news and buy new lips. Douchebag in town, she's got a big mouth. 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 She likes cats and Eddie D, but as a friend, not sexually. She goes online, she shops at malls. For a laugh, she bought some balls. Douchebag in town, she's got a big mouth. Douchebag in town, she's got a big mouth. Douchebag in town, she's got a big mouth. Douchebag in town, she's got a big mouth now. She had a little mouth before. Now it looks like it's slamming the door.
And that was Walk on Water by The Judys, the very best of The Judys album. And guess what? I am wearing a Judy shirt. What? And we finally found our special guest. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Gord McCaw, and I have been a photographer since about 1974, not full-time. I came out here specifically to talk about the vintage neons that I've been shooting since the mid-80s. I'd say out of about maybe close to 60 signs that I would call the classics, probably about at least 90% of those have disappeared now.
Wow, yeah. So poking my nose in where it doesn't belong since 1952, Gord.
That's right. That's
what I've read, yeah. Uh-huh. So, and you've been photographing all over Vancouver.
Not since 1952.
Right, not since 1952, yeah. But yes. Yeah, tell me about a little bit, how did you first get into photography?
I was a journalism student in Calgary in between 73 and 76. And in the second year, photojournalism was a mandatory class. I had zero interest in photography. But like many other people, it was when getting out there and like we were able to borrow cameras from the school's media department and all that. And our instructor would get us out there and shooting that first roll of film, soup in the film, or just processing the film, and then drying, and then putting in the larger, and making a print, and seeing that piece of white paper in the developer tray in a tray of Dektal. First, the dark tones come in, then the middle grays and the lights, and it's pure alchemy. And I've said this before, it put the hook in me and sort of eclipsed my interest in being a news writer. And I took the unusual step of, because I was shooting a lot of stuff for a class paper, and like for the journalism class, they ran it like a newsroom. And then I started shooting stuff for the student association. And getting back, I'm just backtracking for a moment. I dropped my gen eds and electives in, and so I had more time to shoot photos for these two concerns. And I picked those up in a third year because it was supposed to be a two-year course. So I picked up those courses and still had more time. And not only that, but had an endless supply of film, paper, chemistry, which can get pretty expensive. And, you sort of take what you learn in the class, and then you have to kind of get in there and get your hands dirty and make endless mistakes and kind of push back against the urge to say, oh, this is not going anywhere. And you gradually start making some progress, and I end up getting a job with the media department in the school for several months. So then I had access to a third darkroom with professional levels. So I had notions of being a full-time freelance photographer, but that is a pretty tricky business to make go full-time. So I drove taxi for about a year and a half in Calgary, and was still doing photo on my own. Then moved to Edmonton I was there for a year and a half. I got a job with a photo lab that specialized. They had about seven or eight mainly pro clients, did a lot of wedding stuff and all that kind of thing. And this woman who ran the place was a real perfectionist, so really learned a lot about color balancing and stuff like that. Not only did black and white stuff, but ran the mini printer and would do color enlargements. And I would take something to her that I'd say, "Oh, this looks pretty good," and she'd, "No, yeah, do it again." Yeah, so that's the best kind of thing you can get, really, is
real hands-on training.
yeah, somebody who will kind of lay it out for you. That was one thing I should mention about the instructor that I had at Mount Royal. Mm. He was a working photojournalist, and he didn't pull any punches. If you know, we'd bring something to him that we thought was ready for the Pulitzer Prize or something, and he'd say, no. But then he would tell you what you needed to fix.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So that was really good.
Yeah.
So it could have gone the other way, because there was another instructor there who, I guess he shot for the Calgary Herald and I don't know who else. He even had one of his photos from the Calgary Stampede that was made into a postage stamp, and he was... Apparently, his ego was as big as all outdoors, because the students that were with him, all they got was him recounting how great he was, and they didn't really learn much of anything.
Mm.
So I was really lucky that I happened to land with this guy, Dave Rickett. In fact, before I left Edmonton, I moved here June 1st of 79, but for the month of May that year, I had a solo exhibit at the Edmonton Public Library, and Dave Rickett, my old journalism instructor, he'd actually moved to Edmonton, and I got him to come over and kind of critique my stuff, and so I made some changes and pulled a few things and switched stuff around, because, like I say, he was, you know, kind of not shy about telling you that if it was not quite making a grade, right?
Yes. All right, and we're going to talk about one of your first concerts that you photographed.
First concert I ever shot was Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
At the Northlands Coliseum, and I think it was in November something in 1974, and I was green as the grass. You know, I'd only been taking pictures for about maybe a month, and so I bought. You know, the thing is, you could borrow gear from the school media center, and so I had a 200 millimeter lens, and I had kind of had notions that, being a total greenhorn, I thought, well, I'll be able to, you know, I was thinking it was going to act like a 1,000 millimeter lens or something,
right?
Then to my chagrin, I thought, oh my god, he looks like an ant over there on the stage. So I figured out pretty quickly I had to get pretty close to the stage. And back in those days, it's not like now where, you know, there's all kinds of security. You could get close. And I managed to get a couple of frames out of about 36 exposures that were kind of sort of almost okay that they ran in the school paper. But that was my first run. And then it was kind of cool, because I saw Stevie Wonder again in 2018 when I was down in Denver, Colorado. And he was on this festival called Grandoozy.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be they only had one. It was supposed to, but it was some cool talent, like Kendrick Lamar. The best act I saw there, and I knew nothing about them prior to that, was St. Vincent. They were great. And this other guy named, what was his name? Mostly it was rappers, which don't really do it for me. One other great act there that was Mavis Staples. She's fantastic. My God, she's amazing. But it was really cool to see Stevie Wonder again. I shoot a few more photos, and you know, that many years on, so it was sort of a coming full circle thing.
That's right. Yeah.
But the next big show that I shot was in 1975 at Queen's Sheer Heart Attack tour, called the Saddle Dome.
Okay.
In Calgary. No, it wasn't the Saddle Dome. It was the I forget the name of the predecessor, but it was about a 7,000 seater. And again, you know, you could get pretty close, like in a way that the only way you could do that now is if you got a pass from somebody.
That's right.
But in those days, you could get, and so I got some fairly good shots of That band, and they were kind of a cult item at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember. I might have even got comped for that because it was shooting for the school paper.
Oh, great.
So, but yeah. Those turned out a lot better than Stevie Wonder anyway.
Okay, well, we're going to play some Stevie Wonder on CJSF. Here's Overjoyed. Amazing. Stevie Wonder, so beautiful. Love that song. All right. So you have a collection here at SFU, amazingly. tell me about the punk scene here. When did you start shooting that?
Yes, as I was saying, I moved here June 1st of 79. And about 6 weeks later, a couple of women I got to know, they said, we're going down to this club downtown.
Mm-hmm.
You want to come with us? I said, yeah, sure. Knowing nothing about... So we go to the Smiling Buddha.
Yeah.
And on the bill was the Dead Kennedys.
Nice.
I knew nothing about the Dead Kennedys. I had sort of gotten interested in punk because I think I bought the Nevermind the Bollocks album. I still lived in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of... knocked me off my feet. It made me laugh. It was hilarious in some ways, but it was just It was revolutionary. Anyway, so the DKs, the Modernettes, I think Private School, and I'm not sure who else. I actually had the poster. And for some reason, I just wasn't into it at that moment, but I didn't shoot any of people inside the club.
Mm.
But I did get, it was actually the first shot in the exhibit I had in 89. The first, that one shot was Paul McKenzie of the Real McKenzies.
Yes.
The late Brian Goble, a.k.a. Wimpy Roy,
mm-hmm.
of Subhumans, DOA, et cetera. Was Simon Snotface. He was a kind of a well-known character around the scene. And this guy, Gary Genius, mm-hmm. and I knew who knew nothing, but they were just kind of hamming it up out in front of him. It had, they still had the, in cursive script, on this sort of black obsidian-like material that said, Smiling Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice I'm wearing my Buddha shirt.
That's
here.
Right, he is, folks, yeah.
And I had meant to get a shot of the sign in situ, but with a lot of these neon signs, sometimes a tube would be kind of flashing out or not really. So I was waiting for them to get it charged up you know, fully. And I came around the corner with a friend in about 1990, and my heart nearly stopped because the sign was gone. But as you may know, 5440 obtained the sign. They got it restored. They actually had an anvil case built for it, custom built, and they carted it around on tour. And then, much to their credit, they donated it to the Museum of Vancouver, where it is now. That's a whole other story, which I won't get into there. But getting back to that, so I could see something was cooking. And started going to some gigs, like at the Oddfellows Hall. That was just off of Commercial on Gravely, I think. And another place that was cool was the Arcadian Hall, 6th mm-hmm. and Main, torn down long ago. And speaking of Dennis Mills, which we were talking about earlier, of the Judies.
Yes,
that was where I first shot photos of Dennis, was with his band AKA in 1980. And who else? I think the Subhumans were on that bill. The Subhumans and DOA
mm-hmm.
were undoubtedly the most exciting acts that I've, not only this city, but just as far as you could feel this electric energy in the air when those guys were, you know, performing, and it was about to happen kind of thing. It was just, the crowd was so pumped. And I would say that there was virtually no separation between the crowd and the bands, almost, because, you know, my tactic was I would get right at the very edge of the stage and on the edge of the mosh pit, and there would be like a volley of spit and beer bottles flying overhead, which I managed to duck, although I did catch a beer bottle in the head once. Luckily, it wasn't full. But so anyway, between 79 and about 83 is when I shot the majority of the stuff from the punk scene, and ended up printing 42 of those at 60 by 20 and had the show at the Pit, which was at that time at Maple Tree Square, Powell and Carol. So that was my second solo show.
Yeah, we're going to play some DOA right now.
Cool.
Yeah. And we'll be back with more Gord McCall.
Bunches long. These time rats won't kick it out. These time rats is our remote. Just screaming mass. I saw this just a dream. Your robots on screen. In my future dream. That hey. It's not fate or chance. It's the money in the bank. Burn the timber, gather bricks. Jump and fight up a hip for it. And I am the prisoner.
It's a face on chest. Kick somebody in the face. Burn the timber, get the bricks. Drop and fire the bloody dicks. Just you and this. That's television city dream. Get robots, ice cream. In my future dream. And I am the prisoner.
We're going to talk about the event.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
sure enough.
Yes. So tell us, where is it happening? And
Well, it's the Old Hastings Mill Museum, which is at the end of Alma Road at, end of Point Grey Road at Alma. So basically, kind of on the edge of Jericho. That's an interesting building. It's the old Hastings Mill that they moved. In the 1930s, it's the oldest building in Vancouver and kind of a museum. We're going to be talking about vintage and kind of a PowerPoint slide thing of a selection of the neons that I have and whatever history I've been able to find out about them.
And I noticed it was tea as well, right?
Oh, yes.
Tea and little
yeah.
treats.
And Anita, who is one of the people from there. She bakes a fantastic array of pastries and all that. That's worth the $25 right there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's happening on February 22nd, Sunday, 2 p.m. Runs a couple of hours, and we'll be talking about just the various neons in the city. Like, people may remember ones like the Aristocratic that was at Granville and Broadway, where the Indigo is now. That was one of the first signs that I shot in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, along the Granville and the Broadway side, there were 30-foot bands of multiple bands of white neon. And in the center of that, in cursive script, it's spelled out in blue neon, Aristocratic.
Mm.
Well, a month after I shot my photos, someone in their high wisdom decided that had to go.
Oh.
So they left just the center sign that had, you know, Aristi and all over town, because there used to be as many as a dozen Aristocratic restaurants
mm-hmm.
all over the city. Like, for example, the Helen's Grill.
Yes.
At
Love Helen's Grill on Main Street.
Yes, Main and King Ed. That was at one time was an Aristocratic. There used to be another Aristocratic at Smythe and Granville. You can see it in the one photograph of the famous photograph of Fred Herzog.
Mm.
So there's others, like, for example, the what was it called? The Pool Hall at Seymour and Nelson. And it had a really cool sign. It kind of rotated, and they had on the wall on the Nelson side, there was like a pool cue with all these balls that would kind of light up in mm-hmm. sequence, and it's pretty amazing. Vancouver rivaled city like Shanghai in
really?
China, because there was as many as 22,000 neon signs in the heyday in the 50s and 60s. And there was this sort of a movement that that decided that, well, this is gaudy and it's tacky and we don't need it. We've got the beauty of the mountains and the sea. And so in the mid-70s, this, what was his name? Warnett Kennedy, a city councilor, he decided that, well, we have to do away with this completely. So there's certain signs were outlawed. Like, remember the Niagara sign?
I don't.
Oh, the Niagara Hotel.
Oh, okay.
It was on 400 block West Pender.
Mm-hmm.
It was something like three stories high, and it was like a simulation of this waterfall.
Oh, really?
And it had Niagara in red letters in the center.
Oh, okay.
And because it had flashing light, that would, well, it actually survived. That was one, that was amazing, because it was one of the signs that survived this. But a lot of signs, they just kind of did away with them, and it's really a shame.
It is a shame, but I'm so glad that you took photos of them too.
Well, I only wish I'd started sooner, mm-hmm. because there were some, like the Dragon Inn, on Kingsway. There was one, the big one was out at Kingsway and Willingdon.
Okay.
And there was another one, I want to say maybe Kingsway and Earls.
Okay.
Into town. It was a little smaller, but it was equally as cool.
Interesting.
And one that I remember, I'd say, yeah, I must get photos of that sometime. Loban's Flowers, near Fraser in Kingsway. And it was just a beauty. It had all these different flowers, and there was a center part that kind of rotated. Mm. It said Loban's on one side, and then it had all these beautiful bouquets of neon and on the other side. It's just, and then, you know, when it rains, you get that beautiful shimmering light, a multicolored light. So Vancouver was just like a perfect city to have that kind of neon thing going on.
Yes. All right, we're going to get to some more music, and then we're going to be back with more Gord McCall. Here's Cold Tea. Oh, and you know what? It's not playing. So we're going to try, let's play Dogs in the Yard by Sinead X. Sanders. And that one's played.
I don't have a much when it's a put in place. The world's gonna move on without you anyway. A head down in the yard, there was when it's off, and though your man's out the window, there was nothing but waking reality. It's a fire, but only want you know. Just open your eyes, everything you take it. Everything you take it. Down when you're up, your guard is up and you're down. It's so easy to let yourself get spun around. How you enjoy everything, no other creature can. And it'll feel any pain, not by your happy end. Not by your happy end. Not by your happy head. Dogs in the yard, devils ain't it soften. Though your man's out the window, they'll not go again. The everything in decade. And the things that go bump in the night, they all really just part of the battle. And the things that go bump in the night, they all really just part of the battle. and cold down Nicolet Avenue, a city of flame fought fire and ice neath an occupier's boots. King Trump's private army from the DHS, guns belted to their coats.
came to Minneapolis to enforce the law, or so their story goes, against smoke and rubber bullets in the dawn's early light. Citizens stood for justice, their voices ringing through the night. And there were bloody footprints where mercy should have stood, and two dead left to die on snow-filled streets, Alex Pretty and Renee Good. For Minneapolis, I hear your voice singing through the bloody mist. We'll take our stand for this land and the stranger in our midst. Here in our home they killed and roamed in the winter of 26. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of Minneapolis. Trump's federal thugs beat up on his face and his chest. Then we heard the gunshots, and Alex Pretty lay in the snow dead. Their claim was self-defense, sir. Just don't believe your eyes. It's our blood and bones and these whistles and phones against Miller and Noam's dirty lies. Oh, I'm Minneapolis, I hear your voice crying through the bloody mist. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of Minneapolis. Now they say they're here to uphold the law, but they trample on our rights. If your skin is black or brown, my friend, you can be questioned or deported on sight. In our chains of ice out now, our city's heart and soul persists. Through broken glass and bloody tears on the streets of Minneapolis.
And we are back. That was Bruce Springsteen's Street of Minneapolis. One of your faves.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. All right. And
Bruce,
we're going to talk about last year you did an event, City's Most Memorable Eateries with Aaron Chapman. That was in
yes.
September. Mm-hmm. Yes. Tell me about that.
Well, that's another kind of a pet thing of mine, an obsession, some might call it. Photographing particularly vintage diners,
mm-hmm.
and particularly my main focus, you might say, is on places that have like the button stools.
Oh, yes.
And one of the coolest of those, and a place I loved going to, was the Hong Kong Cafe at 150 East Pender in Chinatown. Like the Ovaltine, it was virtually unchanged. As you know, the Ovaltine has been there since 1942.
Mm.
But the I think the Hong Kong actually was in a different location, opened in the late 30s, and then in the 40s they moved to Pender Street and were there till August of 1993. I used to go in quite often because I had a studio down the street at 172 Alexander, mm-hmm. and so I was always in search of cheap beats, and would usually go in for like a coffee in the afternoons to the Oval. I did go to the Ovaltine now and again, but the Hong Kong was a favorite, and a fan, they had a beautiful neon in the window. It was like a Chinese junk on the water, and it said Hong Kong Cafe, I think something like steaks, this and that, and I forget what else. I often wonder what happened to that sign because, you know, it could make a beautiful wall hanging. But the thing about it is it had 29 stools at the counter. And I went talking to Vernon Lum, the owner. he told me it was because of the, you know, the sorry episode of the head tax this era, you know, beginning, I believe that began in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many of these old Chinese bachelors, and, you know, that's why they had such a long counter with so many stools. But I went in there on their last day. I think it was August 22nd. My partner's birthday, in fact,
mm-hmm.
Of 1993, and was shooting some photos, and it was getting close to closing time, 5 p.m., and I asked Mr. Lum, could I have a little more time? I just want to shoot a few more things. He said, listen, you've had 50 years. Buddy, you're out of luck. So the cool thing was that about maybe 5-6 years ago, my friend Catherine Clement, she was the curator of that show, the inaugural show at the Chinatown Museum in mm-hmm. the old Wing Sang building, which is one of the oldest buildings in the city, 1889.
Mm-hmm.
She did that show about it was called the paper trail, I think,
mm-hmm.
and the extensive research and all that. She used one of my photos from the Hong Kong in the exhibit, but prior to that, we went to visit Mr. Lum. She was with the Chinatown Storytelling Center. They were going to do some kind of an exhibit, and she wanted to borrow this apple corer peeler that they used because they made these sort of a little apple puff pastry. They were just to die for, to use that hoary expression. But my gosh. If you didn't get one by about 2 p.m., you weren't getting one because mm-hmm. the women in the surrounding offices would come in and buy them by the boxful, and they just melted in your mouth. And in fact, a friend of Anita's has kind of worked to try to replicate these things, and she's
yes.
come pretty close.
Oh, yes.
she had some at the diner thing that I did
yes.
in September. And so... But that place was just amazing. But Mr. Lum, he couldn't understand why anybody... Well, we were just running a restaurant. He couldn't see what's the big deal. But listen, it was a big deal.
That's right. It's history, baby.
it was cool because...
Yes.
It was great to meet him.
Well, where can people go see the Vancouver Neon Sign Show?
Well, this is it. It's 1575 Alma, which is, again, at the right near the waterfront. If you at the end of Point Grey Road, and it intersects with Alma. This is a little building and a big field, but the fee is $25. Start time is 2 p.m. again on February 22nd, a Sunday, and hopefully it won't be too boring.
No, I think it's going to be super entertaining. I think people love the signs. And yes, and they love you, Gordon. I really appreciate you taking all these photos because I follow you on Facebook. This is the first time we actually met, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
Yes, but I've been following you for years. And yes, and I love all the photos that you've taken around town and also around the world. Mm-hmm. Okay. I finally got that Dennis Mills song. We're going to play Cold Tea. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to the Wham Bam East Van Show. Thank you so much, Gord, for coming. Wham Bam.
East Van.
Yeah, baby.
Jumping and the band was pumping and the group was getting hot. And while the gig was fun, the night's not done. Then you head to your hot spot. Down in Chinatown, we finally found a cafe called the Berry, where the rice is nice and the shrimps are twice as big as you ever see. A group knocked on the door to check their score. See, the clock was pushing three. Said, let us in, let the group begin. To order up cold tea. Cold tea.
Cold tea.
Cold tea.
Cold tea.
We ordered up cold tea. And we drank it down to the line of dawn. And we ordered up cold tea. Cold tea.
Cold tea.
Cold tea. Cold tea, and we drank it down to the line of dawn, and we ordered up cold tea. I'll drink it up now. Twice as big as you ever did see. A group knocked on the door to check the score. See, the clock was pushing three. Said, let us in, let the groove begin. To order up cold tea. Cold tea.
Cold tea.
Cold tea.
Cold tea.
We ordered up cold tea. And we drank it down to the line of dawn. And we ordered up cold tea. JD.
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 We ordered up JD. And we drank it down to the line of dawn. And we ordered up.
We ordered up.
We ordered up.
We ordered up.
Yeah, Cold Tea by the Jasmanian Devils. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This is DJ Medi signing out.
Do you know what you're feeling?